All right. Okay. So, much like all of the speakers today, I had a chance to interact with Adilet and wrote a few papers together when he was at Harvard. And today's talk, even though it does not involve Adilet's work directly, has some connection to him. And this connection is perhaps best illustrated by my very first encounter with him when he first came to Harvard, I guess in September of 2002, probably 10 years ago, pretty much 10 years ago. So he came to see me, and basically what he told me what he wants to work on. And you know what he said, that is he really wants to work on quantum dynamics in many body systems. And he said that he thought about it, and he thought that, you know, quantum optics is really the best kind of, you know, physical playground for that. So I was actually quite surprised by that, and I mean, it was a very really interesting conversation. And of course, I tried to explain to him that, you know, this is really a fascinating subject and fascinating idea, but I mean, there is a little problem in quantum optics. You can really not look at the many body dynamics so very much because photons don't interact with each other. But I guess what Lev said today about Adilet in connection with the mountaineering also kind of applied to some extent to his physics tastes and other pursuits. So in that, you know, he was both patient and stubborn, and he really had a vision of the things he wanted to work on, and you know, he really, you know, kind of pushed this frontier of science. So around that time, of course, the optical lattices came along, and so it became possible to study many body dynamics in the, of cold atoms in optical lattices. But also, for the past 10 years or so, we have been kind of pushing the frontier of the field of strongly interacting photons. And today I will talk a little bit about these recent developments of in this area, which basically involve the quantum dynamics of coupled spins and photons with applications to quantum nonlinear optics. So several generations of students and postdocs at Harvard contributed to that on the theory side. But also now we have a new experiment, which is a collaboration within our Center for Ultracold Atoms together with Vlad and Vuli teachers group. So here is a plan for my talk today. I'd like to start out by basically motivating and introducing the topic, and then I will focus on the key idea of this work, and this is basically an idea of making photons interact by coupling them to strongly interacting atoms. And I'll talk about some first experiments in this area in which we basically, you know, realize an extraordinary optical materials in which the interactions between photons is so strong that we can actually transmit through this material no more than one photon at a time. So this is a topic of the so-called photon-photon blockade. And this occurs in a regime where the interactions are dissipative. But also, if I have time, I will talk about some very recent developments in which we are trying to basically engineer this interaction and extend it in a dispersive regime. And we see some evidence of perhaps creating two-photon bound states. And also, if I have time, I'll talk in the outlook. I'll talk about some ideas to do many-body physics with the strongly interacting photons, and also other realizations and perhaps some applications of these ideas. Okay, so the idea of making single photons interact with each other has been a long-standing goal in the field of optical physics. So this is obviously of fundamental importance. So kind of it's a kind of a holy grail of nonlinear optics, but there are also many potential applications in both quantum and classical information processing. So for example, you know, this kind of, you know, futuristic device where one photon turns a switch on and off and then regulates a transmission of subsequent photons might have actually a lot of interesting applications, for example, you know, optical quantum information processing, but also even on classical information processing, where basically you don't need to convert electrical signal to optical to manipulate information. But at the same time, realizing the device of this kind is actually very challenging. And the first thing is that, of course, photons interact very weakly with each other. So, I mean, in a kind of in a free space, they don't interact at all, essentially. But in even in nonlinear material, interactions between two single photons is extremely weak. In addition, photons can be easily lost. And this basically indicates that as a result of these two challenges, the single photons are really not under control in the same sense as, for example, single atoms or maybe single ions. But just to kind of, you know, put this challenge in a little bit more of a perspective, I'd like to, you know, illustrate it by just a very simple, very intuitive example. And the question that I'd like to ask is the following. Suppose you have a focused laser beam, which basically propagates in the medium of atoms. And I would like to ask a question, how many atoms does it take to absorb a single photon? And there's a very simple answer to this question. So if you just, you know, think about this light beam as a kind of as a flow of a liquid through the pipe, and these atoms as spheres with, you know, some characteristic size given, for example, by the resonant absorption cross section, then the probability of single atom and single photon interacting with each other will just scale as a ratio of this resonant absorption cross section, which is at its maximum given by the wavelength squared, divided by transverse localization of the laser beam. Typically, this quantity is much smaller than unity. As a result, in order to absorb a single photon, you need some number of atoms, which is just inverse of that, which is much greater than one. So then you can ask, okay, so in this kind of system, how can you make it nonlinear? How can you create a nonlinear response? And it's clear that to make this system respond in a nonlinear way, you need to send at least this number of photons to basically saturate these atoms in order to kind of, you know, change the transmission. So as a result, what you see is that, you know, even under this kind of optimized condition, idealized condition, where you exploit the maximum absorption cross-section, the number of photons which will be required to saturate this kind of material will be much larger than unity. It will scale like this d squared over lambda squared. So the idea of this work is to somehow change the things and to enable the strongly interacting photons. And we'll do it by coupling the photons to interacting atoms. Specifically, we will exploit the idea of strong interactions between photons and atomic ensembles, these strong atom-photon interactions, using the techniques such as electromagnetically induced transparency and slow light, and strong interaction between atoms. And we will create a strong interaction between atoms by exciting atoms in the so-called Rydberg states. So as a result, we will obtain a medium with very strong photon-photon interactions. And while in the past years there has been quite a bit of effort to actually create such a strongly nonlinear materials, these prior efforts really focused on taking, for example, single atoms and putting them in a cavity, for example, creating strong interaction between one atom and one cavity mode. Our approach will be very different because it will not make use of the cavities. It will be really kind of a free space propagation problem with having some propagation dynamics. So, so let me just introduce the kind of the key ingredients of this approach. And one of them is the excitation of the atoms in the Rydberg state. So Emmanuel already briefly talked about it. So as most of you remember from your elementary quantum mechanics course, Rydberg atoms are characterized by a large size, which can be basically a fraction of the micrometer if you excite, for example, n equals 100. And as a result, they're extremely polarizable. If you put an electric field, you know, you have really gigantic polarizability. So if you then take two of such atoms next to each other, you know, then they will start talking to each other by just virtue of their large electron cloud size. In fact, the interactions between those atoms, for example, once again for n equals 100, will be 10 to the 14th time larger than, for example, interaction between the ground state atoms. So what we'd like to do is we'd like to basically exploit this kind of strong interactions and also long lifetimes of these Rydberg atoms in order to create a nonlinear medium. So specifically, let's consider the following thought experiment. Let's consider two atoms which are now sitting very far away from each other. And, you know, let's say, suppose that they're excited with the external laser beam. So What will happen is that if they are very far from each other, they will not talk to each other, and so you can basically kind of excite both of them and promote them both to the excited state. However, if you take these two atoms and start bringing them close to each other, then eventually these interactions between Rydberg atoms will start playing a role. So as a result is that if you bring the atoms close to each other, then what will happen is that, you know, you will be able to excite only one of them, but never two. Simply the two atom excitation will be shifted due to this dipole-dipole interaction. And this is a kind of condition where simultaneous excitation of atoms is blocked, is known as a Rydberg blockade. So in fact, this Rydberg blockade occurs for distances where the atom-atom separation is about 10 micrometers or so. So that's this kind of idea of this Rydberg blockade. So basically, if you take the cloud, which is sufficiently small, let's say smaller than 10 micrometers, and try to excite it in a Rydberg state, what will happen? You will be able to excite one atom, but not two. So this Rydberg interaction blocks multiple excitations. And so as a result, then you will be able to think about this kind of blocked atom, blocked ensemble, as a kind of two-level atom. So basically, you'll be able to make transitions between the ground state and the state with one Rydberg excitation, and all of the other excitations will be blocked. Note that, you know, since there are now many atoms which can be excited, the probability of excitation, if you, for example, shine a light on this ensemble, will be increased by the number of the atoms in the ground state. Or in other words, the effective Rabi frequency will scale as a square root of the number of atoms in this blockaded cloud. So this is the essence of this blockade effect, which actually kind of has been theoretically introduced about 10 years ago. And by now, there are many experimental realizations of this, both in the US and in Europe. So what we'd like to do is we'd like to use this kind of dipole blockade for nonlinear optics. And the key idea is very simple. The key idea is that, you know, if there's a single photon is incident on this kind of ensemble of atoms, then the probability to absorb this single photon will scale as n, where m is a number blockaded atom. So as a result, effectively what happens is that you basically increase the absorption cross-section of this kind of nonlinear atomic cloud. Or said in different words, this blockaded microatom is essentially a nonlinear oscillator, is a highly nonlinear oscillator, is a two-level system with this kind of giant cross-section. So more specifically, the approach which we will be using to observe these enhanced nonlinearities will make use of something which is called electromagnetically induced transparency. What electromagnetically induced transparency is a technique which can make the otherwise opaque medium, resonant medium, transparent by essentially taking the excitation which you can create with the weak signal beam and then basically stimulating it into another metastable state. And so what happens in this case is that basically using this kind of additional control field, you can make the medium transparent for the signal photons, and then, you know, this medium also becomes extremely dispersive. So physically, the way to think about this kind of electromagnetically induced transparency and associated slow light propagation is basically to think about a coupled propagation and of photonic and spin waves. So one can think about this so-called dark state polaritons, which are basically a combination of the photons, which are incident on this cloud of atoms, and the wave of flipped spins. So these flipped spins correspond to basically atoms, you know, making transitions between the ground state and this kind of metastable long-lived state. And then basically, this kind of mixing angle is controlled by the external laser light. And in fact, this mixing angle, which determines the contribution of photonic and spin wave component, essentially determines the group velocity of the light. So in fact, when the light travels with a very slow group velocity, it simply means that in this polariton is mostly composed from this kind of, you know, atomic spin wave component, and there is a very little photons residual remaining in it. So what is important for the present work is that this kind of strongly coupled excitation of light and spin wave can slowly propagate together inside the cloud and can be very effectively manipulated or in fact actually coupled to each other by the atomic interactions. So specifically, what we're going to do is we're going to create an AIT medium in which this final metastable state is actually a Rydberg state. And then this Rydberg state will have sufficiently high principal quantum number such that, you know, the two of these Rydberg atoms will interact, you know, very strongly to each other. And then this interaction between the Rydberg atoms will map into the interaction between the polaritons, which will in turn result in strong photon-photon interaction. Just to kind of give you a little bit more kind of intuition or insight into what is happening in this case, let's suppose we have now two of these kind of polaritons, which are initially very far away, and so then they will propagate under normal kind of EIT conditions. But when they enter this region, which I'm going to call a Rydberg blockade region, so in this case, what will happen is that this Rydberg blockade will start coming into play. So in this case, you can only excite one Rydberg atom, but not two. So what will happen is that these two Rydberg polaritons will not be able to coexist inside this region. So as a result, at least one of them will have to be, you know, absorbed, will have to go. So what it means is that basically, you know, the absorption, you know, will kind of exhibit something like this step function here. So, you know, basically one of these two photons will no longer propagate under the EIT condition. And then you can ask a question, so what's the probability that actually upon this kind of photon collision, the you know, at least one of the photons will be absorbed. This probability will be basically given by the so-called optical depth of this blockaded radius. And actually this optical depth of a blockaded radius is precisely lambda squared over d squared multiplied by the number of a blockaded radius. So this kind of simple intuition, which I described, is really, you know, working here. So so this optical depth of a blockaded radius is a key quantity. It should be much larger than one. And this is really a key parameter which enables us to create this extremely nonlinear medium. Okay, with this consideration, we actually set up to try to do it experimentally. And the experiment is very simple. We start with the cold atomic cloud and just shine a tightly focused resonant probe beam. And then in addition, illuminate this cloud with the control beam, which basically takes these excited atoms and promotes them into this Rydberg state. And we can choose which Rydberg state we can couple the atoms to. And we can choose it in a fairly wide range. So in particular, so if we choose this n to be 100, then under these conditions, the Rydberg blockade radius is actually about, you know, 10 to 12 micrometers. And for the densities of atoms which we use, you know, the optical depth of this blockaded region will be on the order of 5 or so. So this will correspond to, you know, very high optical depth. So here is the simple kind of EIT transmission spectrum obtained with this Rydberg state. So in this example, our final state is indeed n equals 100. And so these curves correspond to the typical EIT transmission spectrum. But note that they have quite different transmissions. So these curves are obtained for the probe beam of different intensities. But, you know, for all of these cases, the intensity is extremely weak. So, in fact, this green curve, which has a kind of transmission of something like 60%, has only one photon incident on a laser beam per microsecond. So this red is two photons, and the black, you know, where, you know, where transmission is almost, you know, extinct, so there's almost no transition, is only six photons per microsecond. So what we see here immediately is that this is an extremely nonlinear medium. So we have high transmission, like 70% or even more, for very weak probe, but then there is a very rapid saturation. So this is really a signature, first signature of extraordinary nonlinearity. But, you know, is it really a quantum nonlinearity? To do that, to answer this question, what we can do is measure the photon correlation function for the beam going through the cloud. And this second order of photon correlation function essentially determines the number of coincidences, photon coincidences, the number of two photon events, which are, which can, in a pulse of light, which can go through. And so what we observe when we tune our Rydberg beam to n equals 100 is that basically, we have almost no two photon events. So this G2 function drops to the level of a noise, which is given, which is shown by this red curve. So we have almost no two photon events, simultaneous two photon events for the transmitted photons. Note now that, if we go to a lower Rydberg state, for example, Rydberg state with n equals 46, then this G2 is now much closer to the original this photon statistics is very close to the original coherent state photon statistic with G2 equals 1. So this is makes it, these observations make it clear that this is really this Rydberg interaction which causes this drastic change in the photon statistics. So what we see here is that it's clear that there's only one photon can be transmitted for high n at a time. And there is another important observation, which is basically the time scale associated with this dip. Or in other words, if you want, it's a photon-photon separation, which is now allowed by this medium. So in fact, this photon-photon separation corresponds to distances on the order of, 50 or so of micrometers, which is on the order of our cloud size. So this is actually a surprise. I told you that we cannot have two photons sitting on the top of each other within the Rydberg blockade, which is about 10 micrometers. But now we cannot actually put two photons inside this entire cloud at a time. So some additional observation, we can measure kind of input-output relation. So basically, here is what we do is we're changing the intensity of the incoming laser beam, and this is the plot. What's plotted here is incoming rate of incident photons incident on the cloud, and this is the scaled output rate. So note that this is a log linear plot. So initially, basically, as you increase the intensity of laser, the output increases, but then it very rapidly saturates in about like one photon per microsecond. You basically the output is just constant. So we can also do this experiment by changing, for example, the ratio between the blockade radius and the transverse size of the laser beam. And what we see is that this ratio is essentially the main thing which determines this outgoing rate of the output photon. So basically, the physics which is going on is very much in the spirit of my kind of earlier naive and physical picture that I drew. So basically, if we make our laser beam focus to be smaller than the size of one of these kind of macro atoms, right, then essentially one of these macro atoms just plugs the beam. So then this macro atom can only transmit one photon. And not more. So basically what we see is that that output in our case is less than one photon per cloud, provided that the blockade exceeds the transverse beam size. Yes? That's right. So this G2 measurement is kind of as a measurement of the short noise, if you want. So G2. That's right. So this is this G2 measurement. So the question is, can we detect, change in the photon statistics? And can we detect, can we see a change from Poisson statistics to, for example, sub-Poissonian statistics? And, this is precisely what this G2 measurement does, right? So G2 is a second order correlation. So the Poisson statistics corresponds to 1, right? Everything is below is sub-Poissonian. So the photons start behaving like fermions in some way. Everything which goes above 1, and I hope I can have time to discuss it, will be super Poissonian statistics.
Do you understand why you are super Poissonian?
So, So that's another question. So the question is, so okay, I have talked about this, you know, G2 of 0, which is sub-Poissonian. So why is G2 going above 1? So, and you know, well, you know, obviously, you know, if you go to infinite, infinitely long time, it should come to 1, right? That's, for example, written in Alain's book, you know, so it's got to be right. So, so we do understand why it goes above 1, and the reason, and it's actually, it stays above 1 for something like, you know, 30 microseconds. So the reason for that is the following. So basically, you know, we have some added noise, which is connected to the fact that, you know, the medium is extremely nonlinear. So if, for example, you have one Rydberg atom somewhere in the close proximity of this, you know, it will block everything. So essentially, what happens is that, you know, we excite these Rydberg atoms, you know, and sometimes they either drift outside of the laser beam, or, you know, sometimes they make transition into another state which is not coupled by light. And then one Rydberg atom can basically extinguish transmission for everything else. So this is a source of additional noise, and this is a kind of, it is a fluctuation, exactly, yes. Yeah. So, okay, so, so these are the observations. Can we make sense of these observations in particular? Can we explain the fact that we, you know, our, you know, correlation length scale is actually much larger than the Rydberg blockade, or substantially larger than the Rydberg blockade? So, you know, in order to do that, so we sort of try to, you know, develop a kind of a simple model, and we can do it at least for the case when there are two photons are present at most. So what we could do, we could basically write down an equation, approximate equation for evolution of a two-photon probability amplitude. And this equation, kind of after, you know, some kind of simplifications, you know, it essentially can be cast in this form. So what is shown here is basically our three terms. One is describing, you know, a center of mass motion of this two-photon wave packet. Another one is describing a relative motion. And then another term which corresponds to the photon-photon interaction. In this case, this results in two-photon loss. So there is no time here because basically this is already assuming that we are in a kind of, you know, a steady state limit. So otherwise there would be a time derivative also. So basically what are these various terms? So the first, this is this interaction between this photon. So it's in generally a complex, you know, potential, and in the case when we're at resonance, that the imaginary part is the most important. So this is clear, I discussed this. Where does this term come from? So this term actually acts as a kind of, you know, effective, you know, imaginary mass. So this term originates from the dispersion of the medium. So in particular, we're sitting near the EIT resonance. But of course, for the pulse or for any kind of feature which has a finite frequency, components, what we will start probing, we will start probing basically frequency dependent response. So and in this case, you know, at resonance, this frequency dependent response basically going away from resonance will introduce some absorption, and this will be quadratic in frequency or in K vector, and this is precisely the term which will give rise to this kind of effective imaginary mass. So this interaction potential, you know, is plotted here. So basically, it's dominated at resonance by imaginary part, even though there is some real part. And so these two effects basically determine the dynamics of the wave packet. So basically, so if we look at the evolution of a two-photon probability, So this is equation for two-photon amplitude only, right? For a single photon amplitude, it would not be like this. So nonlinearity comes from this term here. It's a symbol, you know. It's a symbol. It's like, it's an amplitude, you know. It can be X. Right? Yeah, there's nothing. So basically, so you write, you know, you kind of write, I mean, it's just, you know, the state you write as, you know, there's a kind of vacuum plus some E, you know, one, you know, of course there are many modes, and this E is just, Yeah, sorry. I just, Eugene sees it. Okay, so, but it's okay. Is it clear? Yeah. Okay. So E is just a symbol for two photon probability amplitude. Sorry. Okay, so basically, okay, at resonance, we have essentially, instead of Schrödinger equation, we have something like a diffusion equation, and we can just, you know, look at this kind of two photon probability evolution, and you know, it's kind of, you know, this problem has something to do with quench, you know, if you want, but you know, it's a kind of dissipative quench in this case. So you start with the coherent state, and then you let it evolve, and then what happens is that initially you had some non-zero two-photon probability at the entrance of the cell, but you cannot excite two atoms, right, because of the blockade condition. So then eventually, you know, very well, pretty rapidly, this two-photon probability is attenuated. You know, the probability to excite two photons at the same location is attenuated, and then after that, there is this hole created in a two-photon wave function, two-photon probability, and now this hole extends. And this extension is basically precisely due to this kind of imaginary mass, right? So this correlation bank grows kind of as inverse EIT bandwidth, and basically that's what causes this kind of, you know, spreading of this correlation. So of course these two effects compete with each other, and you know, one has to make sure that the two-photon loss exceeds diffusion. So and this happens when this ODB is much larger than one. So this, so the bottom line is that there are these two effects which contribute, and you know, they determine the eventual dynamics, and you know, eventually this probability profiles is something we can measure directly in the G2 function. So this basically interplay between these two processes is responsible for creating this kind of extraordinary nonlinear medium. So I have only 3 minutes left, so I'd like to kind of now point to a few directions, you know, things which we are thinking about and working on. And one of them, one direction is to try to engineer photon interaction. So, okay, so this is this dissipative interaction systems are interesting, but can we also make the interactions dispersive? And so the easiest thing, of course, to do is just to tune this probe beam away from the resonance, so, and then probe dispersive response. So while still maintaining this kind of Rydberg excitation. So, and it turns out that, you know, indeed one can actually control the interaction potential. So in particular, when at large tunings, the medium becomes dispersive and interactions become predominantly real. So as a matter of fact, the real part of the interaction scales as just gamma over delta, whereas the imaginary part, the absorption scales like gamma over delta squared. In this case, also the mass becomes real. So this is also very important because, you know, once again, you go away from a single photon resonance, so there is not so much more of the absorptive effects left. So basically, as a result, you can have a Hamiltonian dynamics. So, you know, what would be the signature of this Hamiltonian dynamics? So perhaps one of the simplest things one could try to look at is basically the photonic bound states. So as a matter of fact, if you have the interaction potential of this kind, you know, you should, you know, in 1D, you should always have at least one bound state. But of course, this bound state has to be, you know, has to have be sufficiently narrow to be kind of well resolved. And it actually happens, you know, when these conditions are satisfied, when delta is much larger than gamma. So we are in a dispersive regime, and ODB times gamma over delta is much larger, is larger than one. So what will happen in this case, you know, it's kind of easy to predict. So if you really, you know, start with the system and you somehow populate this bound state, then the photons will tend to bunch. And as a matter of fact, you can think about looking for this bunching in this G2 of tau. So at zero detuning, we saw this anti-bunching, but as we change the detuning, we should start seeing bunching. And indeed, at least in theory, this actually appears to be the case. Now, so these are very preliminary results. So this kind of are presented in the spirit of the Gordon conference, not to be broadcast outside of the world, but it seems that, but it looks like we actually are starting to see some of these effects. So this is once again, the resonant case where we see anti-bunching, but as we change the tuning, you know, this, you know, G2 functions start to kind of turn around and eventually we see this kind of we see the bunching. So I'd say we almost certainly see the transition from dissipative to coherent dynamics, and perhaps it's we also see some evidence for creating two photon bound states. Okay, so that's where we are. So what do we want to do? So we would like, of course, to go beyond the two-body physics, and the simplest idea would be to really look at something like photonic Luttinger liquid. So in this case, you know, if you try to push more than two photons in this cloud, what you expect to see is that you will start developing some kind of, you know, correlations, kind of long-range correlations, which will correspond to basically kind of a regular single photon crystal. So we have thought about it already, you know, before in various contexts. But, you know, I must say that, you know, and we actually are going to do this experiment, but, you know, at the same time, this is really a novel regime for many body physics, because it involves interplay of dissipation, dynamics, and strong interactions. And it actually, it's completely unclear how one can do the calculations beyond this two photon type of analysis which I presented. There's another interesting direction here also involving many body spin dynamics. So Emmanuel already talked a little bit about this creating some crystals involving Rydberg atoms. So these crystals, you know, are very interesting because they have some kind of, you know, because of strong interactions at large distances. But these crystals kind of lack the kinetic energy part. So this is like a spin model, which has basically sigma z interaction, but there is no flip-flop interaction. Of course, if you now add coupling to light, this coupling to light precisely provides this kind of excitation hopping and long-range flip-flop interactions. And if a dB is larger than one, one can really hope to explore this kind of dissipative and disordered speed models and perhaps use photon correlations as a probe. Then there is also perhaps an applied aspect to this work. So what I showed you is that you can basically now kind of see strong interactions between two photons. So what you could imagine is doing the experiments where you first, you know, take a single photon and trap it inside the medium, and then, you know, this one photon can actually control the propagation of subsequent, you know, photon streams. So this is precisely this kind of single photon switch, and, you know, there are a lot of exciting potential applications like QND photon counting, quantum all optical quantum logic, and stuff like this. So I think my time is up, but just I want to make it, you know, clear that, you know, I think, you know, this principle where, you know, you couple photons strongly to the atoms which are interacting themselves very strongly is likely extendable to many more, many other systems, in particular many solid state systems. And actually we are working towards that by kind of, for example, taking some, you know, basically subwavelength waveguides and coupling, you know, single atoms or ensembles of atoms to these waveguides, you know, and I think, you know, some of this kind of physics, which I already discussed, we are starting to probe now in the other systems. So I think it's a kind of much more generic phenomenon than just, you know, an example presented here. Okay, I think I've used up my time, but I hope I could, you know, basically show you that some extraordinary novel nonlinear materials can be created by combining slow light with strong interactions between atoms. And so we have observed basically a photon-photon blockade, and so perhaps the first evidence for two photon bound states, and, you know, there are a number of exciting directions where this work can be extended. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Questions? David?
For these Rydberg polaritons, do you have a way of trapping them or putting them in a cavity or something so that, you know, so rather than just looking at them on the fly?
So, yes, in principle, you can, you certainly can. Okay, so the question is whether it is possible to somehow create traps for this, for these Rydberg polaritons. And and the answer is almost certainly you can create traps. So in fact, what you can do, you can even create some kind of, like, you know, photonic crystals. So you can manipulate a distortion quantum by using counter-propagating beams. You can basically create these polaritons, you know, which will, you know, you can manipulate a group velocity in any way possible. In particular, you can create some traps. But, you know, of course, the, you know, this is kind of very unnatural for optical systems, right? So for optical systems, we like to put things in and look at the at the things coming out. So, you know, if you trap this, you know.
I was just thinking for the purpose of doing many body physics with them, you sort of give them time to interact.
Yeah, that's it. So, I mean, well, okay, we can already, you know, control the interaction time. We can slow down. So the group, I didn't mention it, but, you know, the group velocities, which, you know, we observe here correspond to interaction time of, you know, some, like few microseconds. And, you know, basically, the only thing that they're limited by, these times are limited by, is decoherence of the Rydberg states, right? So we can actually slow them down even further. So it's not the key issue. The key issue is that if you, for example, want to, you know, create some formalization between them, one should really think how this formalization will occur, how the equilibration, yes, I don't say formally, but how equilibration can occur. And this is really, really subtle. And I think, in particular, but I think one really has to think about it in an optical setting where you input some state, you know, something, it somehow evolves, its evolution time can be long, you can control the interactions and to some extent even a single body kind of properties, but, you know, then, you know, sort of, you know, what will happen, how, you know, but that's, I think, really a theoretical challenge to think about problems of this kind.
So, if you wanted to create a higher density Rydberg sort of gas, could you use a few lasers to sort of overcome the blockade? Because, you know, you have this detuning nearby.
So basically, yeah, so the question is how can we, you know, put more of these guys inside? And so for resonant case, there are obviously several different approaches. One of them is just try to kind of create, you know, longer medium. But, you know, I would say, so the other way is to pump harder. So for the case involving kind of resonant excitation, we actually tried to do this, and we tried to look for crystals, but basically we did not see much, and it was simply because at that resonant case, you know, we basically cannot put more than one photon at a time, at least under our conditions. But at the same time, for off-resonant case, the stuff which we started to look at now. So there we can certainly put more than one photon at a time. This is not prohibited. And I think this will be very, and actually, well, some very interesting things will come out, you know, so. Yeah. Yeah, so basically, there are essentially two length scales in this problem. One of them is a Rydberg blockade, right? And this determines basically, for example, this, you know, these interaction potentials, which I drew. So they are mostly determined by a Rydberg blockade. Right, so
it's size of the atom or the superatom?
It's the size of a superatom.
Superatom.
Right? It's a superatom, right? So the size of the atom is smaller, but the superatom is, you know, under which conditions you can excite the second one, provide the first one excite. That's a Rydberg blockade. We can control it somewhat by changing, for example, our line widths of our lasers, but, you know, it's kind of, you know, in the order of maybe 10 micrometers. And this, this other term, the term, you know, connected with the kind of effective mass or pulse spreading, is basically determined by the absorption length in the cloud. So it's just how dense is the cloud. And this is, you know, kind of intuitively, so one term overwhelms another if the Rydberg blockade is larger than this absorption length. Right? That's a, is it? Oh, no, they totally disturb, you know, they determine, you know, they determine what comes out, right? I know where these coefficients come from, right? So, and, you know, it is clear that, you know, okay, at least already based on what we see, it is clear that this dissipative dynamics and the coherent dynamics is very different, because basically dissipative dynamics is essentially kind of, you know, eating up the two photon, you know, probabilities, exactly. So, but, you know, what I also showed is that if you go away from resonance in under otherwise identical conditions, you know, we actually see now attraction between the photons, right? And I think this attraction is related also to the presence of a bound state of the bound states which appear. So there are basically these two regimes. Experimentally or so, okay, so I mean we can control this by essentially going away from a single photon resonance. Like for example, glass, right, is non-absorbing, so it's just a dispersive material. Right? So there's a difference between a wall and a glass. Exactly. So what we in our case we can have this, you know, we can have this nonlinearity present in both cases, either on resonance or off resonance. And in both cases we can have nonlinearity. In one case it would be absorptive, in another case dispersive. We can talk some
more. So I guess you partially answered it. So off resonant case corresponds to attraction, but then it's not a crystal, so can you turn it into repulsion?
So basically, actually, that is a very good question. So in fact, the side on which we observed these features correspond to repulsion. However, the sign of the effective mass there is also negative, right? So we can control this. So for that, one has to go away from two photons. So these things are present when we sit exactly on two photon resonance. So if we change the two photon detuning a little bit, we can, you know, flip the sign. But then potential becomes actually quite complicated, and it's an interesting question. So
the fact that this nonlinearity is essential, so it's large, that does it mean that I can forget about Markovian approximations, so I can use it still to describe dynamics?
No, I don't think so. So I mean, the time scale for the Markovian approximation is still basically given by the optical frequency, which is still the largest, energy scale in any problem. However, you know, if you ask for what is the effective dynamics once I'm already kind of in this regime of, you know, photons inside and polaritons, I mean, I think the resulting effective theory might be non-Markovian. So even though for spontaneous emission is always a Markovian, you know, and basically it corresponds, I mean, the spontaneous, so what does it mean we hit a hole in two-photon wave function? Simply means that, you know, one of the two photons will be scattered somewhere to the side, and we just don't look at it, right? So in that, you know, and this is, of course, a Markovian process, right? But, you know, but at the same time, especially in this kind of far-off resonant regime where you can sort of write an effective Hamiltonian theory, you know, I can imagine that you could have some non-Markovian effects. Yeah. Could be, yes, effective.
Thank you very much again. The remaining questions for the remainder of the coffee break.